Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
In the moments after Attorney General Mark Herring issued a statement acknowledging he had appeared in blackface as part of a costume when he was in college, lawmakers seemed stunned into silence. When asked about the reaction, lawmakers said no comment or waved their hands in a microphone or even turned and walked away.
Do you have any reaction to the Attorney General's statement?
Prayer.
Prayer. That's the response of Delegate Lamont Bagby, head of the Legislative Black Caucus. For now, that's the only response from the caucus, a key part of the Democratic Party, and lawmakers who are likely to take the lead in reacting to the latest blackface controversy. Delegate Skylar Van Valkenburg says Herring's statement was walking a fine line between admitting that he made a mistake and asking for forgiveness.
Blackface is always wrong. It always needs to be condemned. Looking at the Attorney General's statement, it seemed like he acknowledged that and he understands the pain he's caused.
Democrats have a difficult political calculus. If they force out the governor and the lieutenant governor and the attorney general, Republican Kirk Cox would end up as acting governor. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
Virginia politics have been in chaos for days. The three top elected leaders are all facing scandals. Governor Ralph Northam's medical school yearbook page shows a picture of a man in blackface and another man wearing a Klansman robe and hood. Separately, Northam said he wore blackface at a dance contest. Meanwhile, the Virginia Attorney General has also admitted to wearing blackface, and Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, who was accused of sexual assault earlier this week, is now being accused of sexual assault by a second woman. Fairfax denies the allegations. NPR Sarah McCammon joins me now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Mary Louise.
What are the details of this second allegation of assault against Lieutenant Governor Fairfax?
Well, through her attorney, a woman named Meredith Watson says that Fairfax sexually assaulted her in 2000 when both were students at Duke University in North Carolina. She says the two had been friendly but never had a romantic relationship. And she says she was upset when she heard about an allegation against Fairfax that emerged this week. In her statement, she calls on Fairfax to resign. And Watson says she does not want any financial remuneration. She's just coming forward to share her allegation out of a sense of civic duty. And she says the details of her attack were similar to those described by Professor Vanessa Tyson, who came forward earlier this week.
Okay. And to remind of what Vanessa Tyson is alleging, she's also referring to an incident from years ago.
Right. Now, she is a professor at Scripps College in California. Tyson says she met Fairfax in 2004 at the Democratic National Convention in Boston, and that what began as consensual kissing quickly escalated into a sexual assault. Fairfax says that was entirely consensual. Tyson had tried to take her story to the Washington Post more than a year ago. The Post checked it out and decided not to publish because they said they couldn't corroborate either version of events.
Right.
But rumors about Tyson's accusation were surfacing early this week on a conservative blog. Tyson said she decided to come forward to set the record straight and to provide Virginia residents information about Lieutenant Governor Fairfax that she thinks they should have.
Now, as I said, Fairfax is denying both sets of allegations. Has he said anything else other than just flat denial?
Well, earlier this week, he called for respect for his first accuser, but said he had to dispute her account. On this latest one, he sounds, it's a different tone. Fairfax issued a statement calling this allegation demonstrably false, demanding a full investigation, promising to clear his name. And he calls this a vicious and coordinated smear campaign against him. Fairfax also says he is not planning to resign in light of the second allegation.
One of the stories you tell here, in 1970, when you were a newly elected senator to the Virginia State Senate representing Richmond, you encountered a problem you couldn't ignore, the state song, Carry Me Back to Old Virginia. And I was reminded of the current situation where this year, where many people were angered by calls to get rid of the Confederate battle flag in some southern states. Was it pretty much the same thing, same arguments?
Yes, it was with me, but, you know, I never knew it was the state song, even though all the Virginians were taught to know the song in school. And so when I heard the legislature being entertained one evening by this group and they closed it up with the singing of the song, I couldn't believe it, so I left. Ultimately, then, drill down, and if you look at the second stanza of the song, it even says that this lamentation of the slave wanted to be reunited with old Massa and old Missus in Virginia. But it even went further. It said even when they died and went to heaven, he never wanted to be separated from old Massa and old Missus. He wanted to be a slave even in heaven. I said, now, this is going too far. But even though it took them 17 years or so to deal with that song, they stopped singing it. They never sang it. I never heard it sung again. Now it is considered to be what they call the song emeritus in Virginia. The Confederate flag, in terms of the Confederate emblems, when I was governor of the state of Virginia, I was shocked to learn that the Air National Guard rang that symbol on the lapels, or rather insignia on the sleeves. And I, by executive order, ordered it cut, taken down, and away, and it was. And I didn't deliberate it with it. I didn't argue. I didn't hold meetings. I did it.
But in the first few pages of your book, you include some of the angry letters that were sent to you about your objections to Carry Me Back to Old Virginia. So you've saved them all these years?
I did, and I have them in storage at Virginia Union University at the library named for me. And they were just a few of the excerpts. I got letters from all over the world, and people said, how dare you even think about doing this? Look at this song. It was written by a black man. Don't you know that? I said, yes, he wrote some other song. In the evening by the moonlight, hold him golden slippers. He wrote what he could sell at the time. I don't blame him, but don't tell me I should herald this. And I didn't, and I don't.
Doug Wilder. Context of white supremacy, former governor of Virginia, the first black governor. And it looks like with what's happened to Lieutenant Governor Fairfax, at least for the time being, he will be the only black governor of Virginia, Doug Wilder, the legend. Context of white supremacy, Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, February 10, 2019, so I have been told. The lessons about racism, white supremacy start from the very beginning on this one. We've talked about laughter many times. Very important, I think. There were some chuckles at the beginning. We'll ask about that as we proceed. Before we get to the business of racism, I also wanted time-stamped that Gus T, I've said the whole time that we have been broadcasting, I have been a Seattle resident. I am in Seattle, and we are in the middle of what they are calling snowpocalypse. It snowed, or it's snowing right now. It's been snowing basically the entire weekend. This is more snow than I have seen, I think, except for one other time. Right before, 10 years ago, ironically, right before the cows started, I think it might have snowed a little bit more, but this is very unusual for these parts, hoping the electricity holds out. And I can add, instead of snowmen at the park that is right down the hill, Cal Anderson Park. You can look it up on the map. Famous right in the middle of Seattle, Cal Anderson Park. They didn't build snowmen. They built snow penises. Welsing moment. Plural. Now back to the business at hand. I've said almost for a decade, the cows are timing impeccable. So many different things have happened. I think we were live on the air when the verdict was read in the Myrtle trial for the killing of Trayvon Martin. We were live on the air. We were live on the air for Michael Jackson's funeral. We were live on the air when President Obama was reelected, live on the air when President Trump, when it was announced that he was going to be elected, as predicted by Dr. Welsing. Many things over the years and a number of other instances where I've just said, wow, our timing is just incredible. We are 10 days from the cow's 10-year anniversary, 11 days, excuse me, from our 10-year anniversary. In Virginia, the cow's yoga retreat, flying into Richmond, Virginia, Gus T will be, and the retreat the 21st through the 24th, with all of the attention that's been focused on Virginia, and Gus being born in Virginia, alumnus at the University of Virginia, amazing to have all of this happening with the past week or so for people who have not been following the governor, a white man, Ralph Northam, Democrat, if that means anything to anyone. He has a photograph from his yearbook photo where a Klansman, a white student presumably, is dressed as a Klansman, and a different white student is dressed in blackface. When this was pointed out, he at first said that it was him and he apologized. He took about 12 hours to reflect and said, hold on, wait a second. That's not me. However, I did one time dress up in blackface like Michael Jackson for a talent show. He did admit that. He said he was not going to step down. Within hours, the lieutenant governor, who at first people were thinking he's going to be he's going to follow in Doug Wilder's footsteps, be the second governor after the racist Coon Man, forgot that nickname in the yearbook, Coon Man, for Governor Northam. So Coon Man is going to step down, and it'll be Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax. And then now it's two allegations of sexual misconduct. People are saying he should step down. In fact, over the past two or three days, I've seen most of the attention is focused on Mr. Fairfax. I've seen very little about Coon Man Northam, Governor Coon Man Northam. That has kind of receded to the background. In fact, from what you heard in the audio clip, hey, he might be sitting in a better position now. We got the attention focused on raping black males, per usual, Willie Horton all over again. And yeah, he might be sitting pretty. But that, and then we got the Attorney General Mark Herring, who comes out days later and says, well, you know, I think I dressed up like Curtis Blow once or twice in college. My apologies. The Attorney General now who admits all of this. All of this happens within about 2 days for Black History Month in the state of Virginia. And I think this would be 400 years if it's 1619. If my math, maybe I can add, is it 400 years since they say the first Negroes were brought in shackles to the great Commonwealth, Virginia? What a time for all of this to be happening and us preparing for our retreat. I can only add that I think if they had just played Carry Me Back to Old Virginia, we could have calmed a lot of this down to begin with. I thought it would be great to put all of this in context, since I do know a little bit about Virginia state history. Dr. Welsing would certainly encourage us. You can study white supremacy locally, nationally, globally. We are going to focus locally on Virginia for today, and I think we can still learn a lot. To help us with that, a previous guest, he was with us. We talked about a very specific moment in the history of white terrorism in the state of Virginia. I chose that word deliberately, when whites closed the schools in Prince Edward County for 5 years, didn't want Negroes like Justin Fairfax. Go ahead, use some of the same logic. We don't want them in school with our little white girls. They might, you know, do something untoward. Closed the schools for 5 years in response. Massive resistance as they call it, spearheaded in the great state of Virginia. We talked about that in detail. It was great to get some of that information. I know I didn't know that information as a native of Virginia. I didn't know about all of this until I left the state. And so I think that period, along with a lot of other incidents, are very important when analyzing everything that has taken place in Virginia over the last few weeks. So glad to have him back with us, joining us live from Virginia, Mr. Brian Grogan. Mr. Grogan, you with us, sir?
Good evening. Yes. Glad to be back with you.
Thanks so much for sharing a bit of your Sunday evening. For listeners, I'm sure there's some folks who did not get to hear you the first time around, although it is in the archives. Anything that you would like to tell folks about the work you do, your work on what happened in Prince Edward County, or anything else?
Well, yes. I've been researching the public schools crisis in Prince Edward County for about 10 or 12 years now, working on a documentary film that's struggled to get finished but is still in the works. And I now am in the final process of completing a book of documents that I have edited with a colleague, historian Brian Doherty at Virginia Commonwealth University. And the book is titled A Little Child Shall Lead Them, a documentary account of the struggle for school desegregation in Prince Edward County, Virginia. And what we did was pore through documents over roughly a 100-year period to try to create a background and context and then describe, through the voices of the people that were involved, the events of the public schools fight in Prince Edward County. And so that book is due out in June. And I think a good place to start, ironically, in this conversation, because the last thing you mentioned was about Mark Herring, it's no small irony that almost 2 weeks, 2 years ago to the date, on February 23rd of 2017, there was a ceremony on Capitol Hill. And the building, the state government building that houses the office of the Virginia Attorney General, was renamed, dedicated, and renamed as the Barbara Johns Building. Now, Barbara Johns was the 16-year-old African-American student who led a strike at her school in Farmville, Virginia in 1951. That strike led to Farmville and Prince Edward County becoming one of the five cases involved in the Brown versus Board of Education case. And that was what set the county on the road to this tragic situation where they closed the schools for 5 years. So this whole dedication process happened under the administration of Democratic Governor Terry McAuliffe. Mark Herring was the attorney general at the time. Mark Herring is still the attorney general and is now involved in this discussion, this scandal, however, what... It's difficult to find a word to describe the idiocy of this son, this stuff, of his college yearbook photograph. So I think that was just a little bit of contemporary context thrown back into historical context about this whole nature of race that Virginia has never quite come to grips with.
Words are very important. As you said, you were looking for the correct term, and I don't think idiocy is the correct term. I don't think race is the correct term. The term that I used when talking about Prince Edward County, and if anyone can come up with a better one, let me know, is white terrorism. That's the term that I use when talking about Prince Edward County, to say that we would rather deprive all of the black children of education for 5 years, and the white children, although they did do some racist shenanigans to try to compensate for the white children. But to do that for 5 years, if anyone has a better word than white terrorism, I would like to. Do you have a more accurate term? I shouldn't even say better. Do you have a more accurate term than white terrorism?
No, not at all. And I can't disagree with you on the use of that phrase. One of the things that's happened since the story first broke about Ralph Northam is that almost immediately after the story came out, the Richmond Times-Dispatch newspaper called for Governor Northam to resign. And I thought that the irony of that was just beyond words, because the Richmond Times-Dispatch has this despicable history of racism in its own newspaper. It led the campaign for massive resistance against the Brown versus Board of Education school. After the Brown decision was made, this political effort started within Virginia. This laws passed through the General Assembly to prevent implementation of the Brown decision. And all of that were sort of fodder and groundwork for what eventually happens in Prince Edward County. But the Times-Dispatch was a leading advocate for all of that. It was a loud voice for continuing desegregation, or strict segregation, I should say. And in more recent years, there has been a talk about removing the Confederate memorials, Confederate monuments on Monument Avenue in Richmond, statues to Robert E. Lee, Jefferson Davis, Stonewall Jackson, and Jeb Stuart. And so here on the one hand, the Times-Dispatch is calling for Governor Northam to resign, but the Times-Dispatch has also been a leading voice for saving these statues to Virginia history and to Virginia heritage. Well, what is that heritage about? It's a heritage to slavery. It's a heritage to oppression. And these things become so entwined so quickly that people forget to look at the larger historical context of these situations. It's not just about Governor Northam having behaved badly. It's not just about these photographs of 1980, but it's these conditions that have existed in Virginia for decades and decades and decades.
That
allow people to
think. Centuries.
Yeah, allow centuries, yes, but I'm just talking in this modern context. That allow people to think that that behavior is okay. It allows them to do those sort of things without giving any thought to what it actually means and to what kind of messages that they're sending. So I pulled out a couple of little documents to just read a couple of sentences to you because I think this helps provide some historical background. In the late post-Civil War period, the Reconstruction period, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution are passed. The 13th abolishes slavery. The 14th grants citizenship to anybody born in the United States. And the 15th guarantees the right to vote. And those have been in the Constitution ever since. But it's not that they've actually always been applied or that states haven't used every means possible to deny people the right to vote, or now we're going through big battles over citizenship. Anyway, so in the late 1890s, after Reconstruction, a campaign starts to rewrite the Virginia Constitution. The new Constitution after the Civil War that was a requirement for Virginia to get back into the Union was instituted in 1870. And then the campaign in the late 1890s to rewrite the Constitution. And this is a sentence from a broadsheet, a political campaign sheet. The heading of the sheet said, "No white man to lose his vote in Virginia. This assurance given by men who are the most competent to speak with authority." And this was about a campaign to create a constitutional convention to rewrite the Constitution. And within this document is this sentence: "The Democratic Party is pledged in its platform to eliminate the ignorant and worthless Negro as a factor from the politics of this state without taking the right of suffrage from a single white man." And then further on it says, "The convention is slowly but surely framing a law that will so effectively exclude the idle, shiftless, and illiterate of the Negro race from the suffrage that the gates of the Republican wrath cannot prevail against it." So this was Virginia roaring back. This is when the whole notion of the lost cause is created. This is Virginia saying, we may have lost the Civil War, but we're not going away. This is Virginia saying to the African-American population of the state, that you may no longer be slaves, but don't begin to think that we are giving ground to you. And so that's when these things start to become codified. They become part of the political structure of the state for the next century and plus more. And this is the conditions in which these men, whether it's Governor Northam or Attorney General Herring, we can go back to previous governors. Governor Bob McDonald got in the stirred up a great deal of trouble when he issued a proclamation declaring Confederate History Month, which had been in April of every year and was still a regular event until his administration. And in that documentation, he talks about Confederate History Month, but he fails to make any mention at all of slavery and the legacy of slavery and the relationship of slavery to the Confederacy. So those are the broader brushes to me of the context of what happens when these men in college, they grow up in these sort of conditions, and it is, as you say, it is a continue. It's subtle sometimes. Sometimes it's very overt. Sometimes it's legalistic. But it is this continuous sense of legalistic terrorism, legalistic oppression, cultural and societal oppression. And it's built into the state of Virginia, and it's into its culture and its politics and its society.
Context of white supremacy. Again, our guest, Mr. Grogan, joining us live from Virginia. Just shiftless, the Negroes. I did want to point out, you said allowing when behavior like Governor Coon Man Northam, Attorney General Herring, allowing people to think that this sort of thing is okay. And I think just with all of the wonderful evidence that you just presented, I think racist man, racist woman, I think they do, in fact, think that this behavior is okay. In fact, that this is what they are supposed to engage in. Now, I think at least at this particular point in time, 2019, engaging in this sort of behavior publicly is not supposed to be the type of thing that you know, oh yeah. But that's the same thing with like racist jokes. Like, you're not supposed to engage in that sort of thing publicly. Now, privately, hey, let's hear the latest nigger jokes. Let's tell them all. I think that's the same sort of thing. It's not allowing people to think this is okay. This is white culture, as you just laid out eloquently. And I want to go again, all of this controversy, everybody, Governor Coon Man Northam, and I want to say again, I do not want him to resign. I thought that was great about the Richmond Dispatch and their hypocrisy, because that's what I see a lot of with this. Really, any white person who says, I want Governor Coon Man Northam to step down, or I want Attorney General Herring to step down. No, I want them to stay there the entire time. I do want to be able to call Governor Northam Coon Man whenever I feel like it, since that is his identified nickname. He affirmed it. It's in the yearbook. Anytime that I'd like to call him that, I feel any black person that would like to reference him as that, that should be okay. But him, any white person saying that they should step down from office, wait a minute. The state song Emeritus in Virginia is Carry Me Back to Old Virginia. And according to former Governor Doug Wilder, whites were not pleased. This is not much like with the Confederate monuments. It was not like, oh, yeah, this shouldn't be the state song. You're right, Doug. Let's pick a better song. No, it was, what are you talking about? Carry Me Back from Old Virginia. This is a classic. What are you doing messing up the state song? And he said in that sound clip, the state legislature, not the Klan, not one-tooth ignorant white people sitting around in the backwoods. He said the state legislature would get up and sing that very Carry Me Back to Old Virginia. He was stunned. I just want to make one quick point about that, because, I mean, that's when we talk about Governor Coon Man or the Attorney General. Wait a minute. We for decades did this. I mentioned before Nixon's piano with former President Nixon. They would do the same thing. That's the way Dr. Kenneth O'Reilly starts his book. They would have a minstrel show at the D.C. club, and this had been going on for years. What are we shocked or surprised about him having this in his yearbook? I did have a question I wanted to ask about Governor Northam, but what did you want to add, Mr. Grogan?
Well, I was going to give you another little bit more of sort of historical context for all this stuff. Each time in Virginia, if you look back over the arc of Virginia history for about 100 years, each time there's been a moment of advancement, a moment of opportunity for African-American citizens of the Commonwealth, there's always been a huge pushback. And one of them I just described to you, the institution of this new constitution, and that constitution goes into effect in 1902. In Prince Edward County, for example, there were about 1,200 registered black voters in Prince Edward County before the Constitution changed. After the Constitution changed, there were about 150 registered black voters. So 90-some percent of the black voters of Prince Edward County were disenfranchised by this new Constitution. Now, in spite of that claim of that political broadside, a large amount of the poor white population of the state was also disenfranchised. And so what happened with the 1902 Constitution, essentially they created another landed gentry, you know, upper class, middle class, business types, landowners, that became the voting populace of the state, and they controlled state government for the next several decades. So you skip ahead to World War II, and post-World War II, you have a lot of returning GIs, a number of African-American servicemen, who had not only been out and seen the world, but had served their country and came back with skills and wanted to reach out for their own civil rights. That's, you know, a great moment of fervor and, the energy that comes from those men coming back from World War II that pours into the civil rights and essentially helps fire the modern civil rights movement. In 1948, Harry Truman desegregates the military. And within the military itself, they follow military protocol. They accept the orders of the commander-in-chief. And in large measure, the armies desegregate in rather quick order. In Virginia, their response to the desegregation, Truman's desegregation of the military, is to set up what they call the Virginia Textbook Commission. And through that, they decide that they need to make sure that Virginia history is taught properly. And this is when the whole notion of the lost cause of the Civil War gets codified into education in Virginia. And a number of the men who serve on that textbook commission, which starts in 48, in 54, 55, they are leading massive resistors. Two men on the textbook commission are future governors of Virginia that fight against desegregation. Well, all of that sort of a prelude to getting to a little clip I wanted to read you from a high school history textbook. It was called Cavalier Commonwealth. And it was the Virginia public high school textbook, history textbook, for more than 20 years. It's originally published in 1957. And so here's just one little brief passage I think is important to hear. And it's talking about slavery. His condition had its advantages. He usually worked the accepted work week of the colony from sunrise to sundown daily, except Sunday. But he enjoyed long holidays, especially at Christmas. He did not work so hard as the average free laborer, since he did not have to worry about losing his job. In fact, the slave enjoyed what we might call comprehensive social security. Generally speaking, his food was plentiful, his clothing adequate, his cabin warm, his health protected, his leisure carefree. He did not have to worry about hard times, unemployment, or old age. While his master was allowed by law to punish, and even under some circumstances to kill him, the slave was protected to an effective degree by his value as property. Now, this was the textbook written in 1957, used through the 60s, through the 70s, and into the 1980s. That's the period when all of these governors and politicians we're talking about would have been attending school, secondary school in Virginia. And I've read this. I was astonished the first time I saw this passage in this history book. And it's another expression of that kind of terrorism that you talk about. You know, what would it be like for yourself growing up, or any black citizen of the Commonwealth, growing up, going to school, you're studying Virginia history, and you come to this page about slavery, and it says, well, it was really just like Social Security. The disgust is just beyond words. But that is how people were being taught in the Commonwealth, in their public school system, and continued to be used. The same language, the same book was used long after the schools were desegregated. So that tells you about this ongoing political milieu, this societal context of what we find then, these expressions in these photographs of Governor Herring and, of Governor Northam and Attorney General Herring.
Context of white supremacy. I have some specific questions about these incidents that I want to ask and see if we can get your thoughts on these. This is a quote I have been reading for some years on the program. I am loving this context. So I normally don't give the author name, but I'll do it this time because it just doesn't matter. A famous author, Ta-Nehisi Coates, black male. Years ago, he wrote a piece. He was talking about racism in a public article. And he said, White people are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism, but rarely are they pained enough. And I've asked white people this question for years. I'm going to be very specific. So in this situation, Governor Coon Man Northam, in your opinion, as a white man and a resident of Virginia, do you think Governor Coon Man Northam is sincerely and greatly pained by racism?
Gosh, that's a, you know, you can't read another person's heart or soul. And the man has a history. He has a history as a doctor and his history of military service and service as a politician to the Commonwealth. That there are all of the things that he and his supporters are using to defend his tenure and to sustain his governorship. That said, some of this stuff I think is so insidious and so ingrained in culture that people don't recognize it. They don't think about it.
Well, hang on here before, because that's one of the ways, that's why I prefaced why I said I had direct questions. I've concluded one of the ways that white people practice white supremacy racism is they do not answer questions when black people or non-white people ask them questions. So this is one I would really appreciate an answer. If you want to give context, that's fine as well. But so the question, Mr. Coates, his quote, white people are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism. Just your observation. Do you think Governor Coon Man Northam, do you think he is sincerely and greatly pained by racism?
I don't know. And this is not, because I agree entirely with what Mr. Coates has said. I recall reading that essay some time ago.
Can you cite some specific examples or evidence where you might say, hey, this might be an example to suggest that Governor Northam is sincerely and greatly pained by racism? This is an example where he specifically has demonstrated in a tangible manner his sincerity and his great pain about racism. Can you cite or list something specifically?
Well, no, I can't, because I don't know Governor Northam's career that closely. Now, what I can say is I've seen it in other governors. I mentioned this, the dedication of the Barbara Johns building. I think that was certainly an enormous recognition of the pain of the experience of Prince Edward County. And it was a well-deserved recognition of the incredible thing that Barbara Johns did in Prince Edward County. And the same happened in Virginia in 2008 when they dedicated the Virginia Civil Rights Memorial on the Capitol grounds. And it's actually, this memorial is closer to the state capitol than the statue of Harry Byrd. And I think in some ways that was intentional.
That's
when
hilarious.
when they established that.
Is Mr. Byrd's statue...
And Harry Byrd essentially controlled politics in the state of Virginia for a good 30 or more years.
Wow.
And he was an architect, the architect in Virginia of massive resistance.
I just want to hop in there because you were citing these wonderful things that were done that you did start by saying Mr. Northam did not do these things previously.
Right.
Governor.
And as I say, and that's part of
that's why.
I mean, that's,
hang on
I'm
one
not,
second.
Paul,
hang
I'm
on
not
second.
That political of a person. I'm
okay.
more. I'm more.
That's fine.
I just want to point out for listeners
that's very important because you were not able to cite any examples of how. Governor
no, no, I don't. And I don't. And I only qualify by saying that I've not.
Hang on a second, because this is important. Yeah. I want to make sure folks get this. You were not able to cite any evidence of Governor Coon Man Northam demonstrating that he is sincerely and greatly pained by racism. Now, there appears to be evidence of him practicing racism. I think we can agree on that. Him practicing white supremacy racism. I can't think of anything either that I could submit to say there's evidence that this is a white man that is greatly and sincerely pained by racism. But all right, you said you don't know. How about let's switch to Attorney General Mark Herring. According to your observations, just as a white man, resident of Virginia, do you think that Attorney General Mark Herring is sincerely and greatly pained by racism?
Yes, I think Attorney General Herring over his tenure as Attorney General has demonstrated that in his work on criminal justice reform and things like that. Again, I only qualify my remarks by saying that I'm not a political junkie. I'm not, you know, I couldn't tell you what the Virginia General Assembly is doing this week or what legislation is up for consideration and stuff like that, because I don't follow that closely. But I do think that Attorney General Herring on numerous occasions has demonstrated his efforts towards rectifying the damages, improving conditions, trying to address issues of structural and endemic issues of racism in the Commonwealth.
That is interesting. I'm going to have to check out his platform to see if he mentions racism anywhere and some of the things that he's done with criminal justice reform. Are you of the opinion that Governor Northam should resign, yay or nay? Do you think he should stay in office, or do you think he should step down?
No, I think I was interested to hear you say that you think he should stay. I've heard arguments that he should stay, and my initial reaction, and I think I still hold to it, is that he should resign. And it was partly not just the photographs, but his response to it. And there was not just a clumsy, inartful, but inarticulate.
Are you talking about President Trump or Mr. Northam?
Oh, both. No, but I'm saying Governor Northam's immediate and secondary response to the photographs appearing and to his political crisis, I thought were terrible. And I thought, for those reasons alone, and a friend of mine who's a historian, a African-American, a gay African-American, who is from Virginia, he wrote a post recently on Facebook that I read saying that Governor Northam should demonstrate his, continue to demonstrate his goodwill and good efforts for the black people of the Commonwealth, but he should do it outside of the office, and that he continue to do that good work, but because of all of his missteps in the past week or 10 days, that he should resign. And I think I agree with that assessment.
For all of the context and history, any of our listeners that are in the state of Virginia, definitely you should dial in, share a thought, ask a question for Mr. Grogan. I'm of the opinion that he should stay in office. And that joke that I made, you know, are you talking about our president or Governor Koonman? It was purposeful, because how can I ask Mr. Northam to resign because of a photograph or anything that he did 40 years ago and saying that it was racist, when the person in the White House, I mean, it's like, well, in the last 20 seconds, I think on Twitter, he might have said something. And then we're in the state where the state song Emeritus is carrying me back to old Virginia. And I say the same thing that I said before, and it applies to you too as well, sir. Make sure I have some integrity. Really, any white person who says that Governor Northam should resign, now how hypocritical are we being? Any white person. Now, are you really saying that you've never done anything racist, that you can look at another white person and say, oh yeah, you got to get out of here, buddy. We don't tolerate. Can you even say that, Mr. Grogan, as you're a white man?
Oh, no, I'm sure. You know, I'm sure growing up at some point in my life, I have.
Okay.
It is something that you can't. It is a cultural. It's an acculturation people go through as white people growing up in the United States of America. If you aren't fully aware, fully cognizant of yourself and your culture and your history, then it's very likely that at some point in your life you've done something. I agree with you entirely about the Trump-Northam comparison. And here is then we're really stepping into a political arena, which is how do Democrats, the Democratic Party, call themselves into account and try to present themselves as having integrity, or trying to recognize their history, the dangers and the histories of racism, while at the same time not giving up their political power, their political fight against this racist who's in the White House. And that's a tricky, I'm not a political expert, I'm not a political consultant, but that is an extraordinarily difficult question.
Hmm. Do you think Governor Northam is racist?
No, I don't think he is. I think probably at heart he's not.
Hmm. Now, go ahead.
Oh, I just, you know, again, it's these things that happen. I went to college in Virginia. You went to college in Virginia. I know what college in Virginia was like in the 1970s. And I know what, but I came from Washington, D.C. So frankly, I was shocked when I came to college in Virginia by what I was witnessing constantly day in and day out among the people I went to school with. And it was the casualness of it. It was the thoughtlessness of it. It wasn't necessarily aggressively racist. It was just off the cuff. It was always there. It was.
Can you give us a specific example?
Yeah, I mean, you'd go into the college cafeteria and the people who are preparing your food, the people who are cleaning the class buildings, the people who are keeping the grounds of the college are all African American. And so how many times a day would you hear those people referred to as with a racial epithet? Just in a casual manner, you know, all those dumb so-and-sos, they can't get, they can't cook the chicken right, or, you know, because the food's not up fast enough, or the classroom's not clean, or the trash cans aren't empty, or the tractor mowing the lawns is in the way of somebody wanting to drive to their fraternity house, or something like that. It's a casual kind of thing. And that, to me, is the ugliness of it. And it speaks to the heart of sort of what the societal context has been, what the upbringing has been for these people, that they can throw off this stuff without any thought at all. And that lends itself then to people having blackface parties and wearing Klan outfits. It's all part of the context.
Mm. Which is still done, I will add. That sort of thing comes up on a regular basis at colleges and universities across the country. NPR had a report where they were talking about this sort of thing being done on Dr. King. In fact, it was yesterday. It was just yesterday they aired the report, and it was in connection to this. And they said that it was a young black female. She called in, and she said that this was recent, within like the last few years, that they had a party on Dr. King's birthday, and it was living the dream, and they had foil on their teeth and 40 ounce, dressed up like Curtis Blow, basically. But this was like something that happened in the 2000s. This is what it means to be white, enjoy practicing racism. White supremacy. And I do want to hang on one second. Okay. I do want to make an important point. The way that, or what I am articulating, is not that the Democrats are not racist and Donald Trump is racist and or Republicans are racist, because I do hear that regularly, that sort of thinking in terms of racism, white supremacy exists, and it's isolated to one party. You yourself, when you read the report talking about the history of white supremacy, racism in Virginia, and getting rid of the shiftless Negroes, that was a Democratic publication, if my memory is correct.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I do not ever talk about racism, white supremacy as Republican Democrat. I think Mark Herring is a Democrat as well. Consistently, what does it mean to be white? All of the other categories are irrelevant. Democrat, Republican, male, female, Virginian, French. We don't even have to put countries on it, but we are just talking about Virginia specifically. But I mean, Australia, at the end of the day, what does it mean to be classified as white? When you have that classification, and you can't be ignorant about racism, white supremacy, if you are classified as white anywhere in the known universe. That's why you have situation. That's why. And I would even submit that's why most people don't call Mark Herring racist. You might hear a lot of white people call Donald Trump racist, but he is about the only one generally white, regardless of what that white person has done. Dressed up in a Klan outfit, admitting to dressing up as Michael Jackson, Curtis Blow, Chaka Khan, Al Sharpton, whatever they have done. I mean, you have to do a lot and be a very, very special white person for a large number of white people to start saying, oh, yeah, I think this person is racist. We pointed that pattern out for years on this broadcast as well. Another important point about this case that I wanted to ask, they said on NPR and a number of other outlets, they went to ask white Democrats what they think should be done with Mr. Northam. Should he resign? Should he stay? What should we do? If he stays, should we impeach him? What should we do? And they've said, we're going to defer to the Black Democratic Caucus. And I said, whoa, when does the Democratic Party ever defer to the Black Democratic Caucus on anything? Can you remember another time when they have deferred to the Black Democratic Caucus on a matter?
Oh, no, no. And what that is a twofold thing. One is it's people covering their political ass by saying, well, really, we should let the Black Democratic Caucus make this decision, which is completely wrong. You know, and it's also it's a way for them to avoid coming out and making a strong statement themselves. So it's sort of political cover for them. But I want to get back for just a second to your Republican-Democratic thing, and I agree with you entirely. And that is part of one of these problems about these discussions about race, is that so often people try to make it a political argument. And Republicans will say, well, look back at the 1950s in Virginia. Those were all Democrats. It was Democrats that ran the South, and which is absolutely true. It was the Republican Party of Lincoln that freed the slaves. It was the Republican Party that instituted the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. But those things evolved over time, and they flipped. And so suddenly all of those Southern Democrats became Republicans, and those Republicans became Democrats. And so it is not, historically, you can't look at it as a strict political issue. Now, it is a white issue, and there's no question about that. And I don't recall if we talked about this last time I was on your show, but there's a book, a very important book, by a man named Ted Allen called The Invention of the White Race. And the whole notion of the white race was created in Virginia in the early 1600s. It doesn't exist before then. The identity differentiation of race doesn't exist in the colonies before Bacon's Rebellion in Virginia. And what happens after that, prior to that, people are identified by their country of origin, as you know, they're the Germans or the English or the or they're Lutherans or Episcopalians or Anglicans. They're identified that way. African Americans are identified as Africans. That's how people are identified in all of these colonial records. Bacon's Rebellion was a rebellion of indentured servants, lower class white people, and black people against colonial power in Virginia. And they wanted their freedom. They wanted political power, and they wanted some economic opportunity. And this rebellion was put down, and the instigators were hung. But shortly after that, this notion was created of the white race. And it was a way to differentiate between poor white people and black people. It was a way to split that political power that had developed among those group of people in lower economic classes, or indentured people or slaves. And that is the origin, according to this historian, Ted Allen. And I admire his work, and I think he's done a very important piece of work in exploring this history. That's when these notions of race become defined in the history of the United States. And they carry forward forever forward. They're always there. They're in every sort of legal and constitutional activity sense. There's always this continuous distinction of black people versus white people. And that's the foundational issue of this institutionalized racism.
I think, just again, accuracy, it's not white people versus black people. It's white people dominating supreme over black people. That's what gets codified and enacted in law and behavior. I have one more question or one more point, and then I'll get some of our callers who dialed in. I see your hands. I think it's so important. Again, new addition to Gus T's Top 10, Dr. Tommy J. Curry, The Man Knot, Race, Class, Genre, and the Dilemmas of Black Manhood. Yeah, we got a shout out in the book, but, you know, that, yeah, I don't even need to say anything else about that. Top 10, The Man Knot. He has a portion in the books. This is related to Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, who, again, just about 7 days ago at the beginning of the month, it's only the 10th at the beginning of the month, they were saying he's going to be the next governor. They have NPR reports. They were talking about Doug Wilder following in his footsteps. You're going to replace Coon Man Northam. And now, whammo. But Dr. Curry, he writes, black males are constituted by the accusations waged against them. This phenomenon is not interracial, but also intra-racial and societal. For example, in 2002, Juanetta Gibson, a black teenage girl, claimed that 15-year-old Brian Banks raped her at Long Beach Polytechnic High School. Gibson's mother then sued the school district for endangering her daughter and reached a $1.5 million settlement. Years later, Juanetta Gibson confessed that Banks had never raped her and that he was simply the most convenient scapegoat for a teenage girl fearful that her mother would find out she was sexually active. But this occurred after Banks had spent 5 years in jail, ultimately losing his opportunity to play college football and his chance to play for the National Football League. His innocence was denied because he was a black male. The world believed he was guilty of rape because the world fundamentally believes black men, more likely than not, are rapists. It was easy for me to locate that sentence in the book for today's program because I have it highlighted. I highlighted it in the book. That sentence, I was frozen. We read it on the book club, and I asked listeners, do you all think that's true? And now I'm looking at the Governor Fairfax, or Lieutenant Governor, excuse me, Lieutenant Governor Fairfax situation. Ooh. I'll ask Mr. Grogan. I do have a question about Mr. Fairfax and how all of this has conveniently shifted attention away from Governor Coon Man. But do you think that's true? Just based on your opinion, that last sentence, the world believed, he was talking about Mr. Banks in this situation, the world believed he was guilty of rape because the world fundamentally believes black men, more likely than not, are rapists. Do you think that's true?
I do. Yes, I think that the story about Mr. Banks in Los Angeles or Long Beach was a tragic story, and it was fought over for years before there was ever a confession that he was falsely accused. And so it was an ongoing legal battle this poor fellow went through. And as you say, he lost this enormous opportunity he had to play college and university football and potentially play in the NFL, all because of this false accusation. And history is littered with these false accusations. I mean, we go back to Emmett Till. We go back to race riots and following World War I and World War II, where people were falsely accused of rape as a pretext to create havoc in the black community. And so I think you're right fundamentally with the point and what that book says. And I also think it carries forward a little bit more powerfully in that it is not just directed towards an individual, but it's that kind of accusation. But it has historically been used, that accusation directed at an individual in order to engulf a community and attack a community.
Do you just right now in your assessment, I think what you just said, totally accurate. Do you think just your assessment, who's in greater political danger right now? Lieutenant Governor Fairfax, black male, or Governor Northam?
Well, there's one other person that we haven't mentioned, and I will answer your question, but there's one other person we haven't mentioned, and that is the leading Republican in the Virginia House of Virginia General Assembly, a man named Tommy Normand, who is the top, I think he's maybe the longest serving Republican in the General Assembly. And I don't know if you've heard this story, but it just came out a few days ago. He was the editor of the yearbook at Virginia Military Institute the year he graduated, and it's full of racist photographs and racist language. And so that goes back to our early argument about politics. It's not political parties at all. You start digging into any of these people, and you find plenty of it. As to who's in greater political danger right now, I think it is Lieutenant Governor Fairfax. Because of two things. One, the accusations that you just mentioned and the nature of them. And it shifted the argument. It shifted the tenor of the argument from childhood pranks, as people tend to write off the other things, the Northam and the Herring events, to a sexual assault. And it's hard to... So the Northam issue has quieted down here in Virginia a little bit. And the Fairfax issue is one that's coming to the fore now. And so I think he may be in the greater political danger. And there have been arguments and people are saying, look, you've got to give this man time. And I appreciate the fact that Mr. Fairfax has called for this FBI investigation of the second accusation, because that seems very oddly timed. That it should just come out at this point. It's not as if Mr. Fairfax is a brand new political figure. He's been elected. He's been in office for 2 years. He'd previously run. He'd previously been in the Virginia General Assembly. So why is this accusation from college just appearing now? I find that needing some answers. A little questionable.
Indeed, no coincidences in the system of racism, white supremacy.
And you have to look at the source of both of the, all of these accusations all came from the same very right-wing media source.
I think Mr. Fairfax pointed that out as well, when the first accusation was reported. I think he also made note of that, but... the number for folks, if you have a question, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see, our caller in Michigan, if you have a question for Mr. Grogan, line should be open. Proceed.
Good evening. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. And you're done.
Thanks for taking my call. I just have one question to the guest. Who do you believe or who do you feel is most confused about racism, white supremacy, white people or non-white people, and why?
Who do I feel is most confused about it? Is that the question?
Yeah, most confused about, yes.
I don't think... I'm an older white male. I'm 67 years old. I have studied this stuff. I've worked in it for a long time. But I will never truly understand the experience of any African-American person who's experienced systemic racism. I can only try to come to grips with it, but I can never understand your experience. And so... So fundamentally, I would say the answer has to be that white people are more confused about it than people of color. Do I address what you're trying to ask?
Yeah, I just wanted to know what your opinion was and in your experience, who you thought was most confused. So thanks.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at these photographs of Governor Northam and Attorney General Herring, or the ones that of this Republican I just mentioned, Tommy Norman. And those alone are evidence just of obliviousness, just total confusion, total obliviousness. And it is that kind of ignorance about the very nature of racism that white people are completely confused about. It is, as Gus said at the beginning of the show, it is a level of terrorism. And I think you can use that word appropriately in the sense that they are willfully ignorant. And you have to work hard to be that ignorant of the history of the United States and the history of African Americans in the United States. You know, whether we're looking at the past 10 years or past week or past 10 years or past 100 years and this year in Virginia is the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the first slaves in Jamestown, Virginia.
What do you mean when you say willfully ignorant? And then I'll mute my line.
Oh, I just think you really have to ignore a whole lot of history not to see these things, not to see what the nature of racism is. You just really need to not be either not being paying attention, or earlier in the show, if you heard this portion when I read a paragraph out of a Virginia history textbook that was describing slavery as a kind of social security. Well, that textbook was written by white people. It was written by a couple of white college professors in 1957. So that was either willful ignorance or it was white propaganda. And I would say in this case, in this particular case, I'd say it was white propaganda.
And would you say the majority of white people are willfully ignorant then?
It's always hard to use words like majorities of anything, but I think it's part of our broader culture. This notion of demonizing people, whether they're African Americans or immigrants or people of different religions, different backgrounds, different languages. I'll tell you a little story that's. During the course of my research on Prince Edward County, I met an extraordinary woman named Jean Fairfax, and I think it's a shame that she isn't better known in the history of the civil rights movement. Jean worked for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund for decades. She worked for the American Friends Service Committee for decades. And she worked for the American Friends, and she went to Germany, in post-war Germany in 1945. She went with the Friends to help with resettlement with refugees in Germany. Jean was an African-American woman from Cleveland. And I said, well, how did you manage in Germany? And she said, well, I spoke German. And I said, please explain, how in the world did you happen to know how to speak German? What was your growing up? And she's, well, growing up in Cleveland for her in the 1930s, she went to a bilingual school that was bilingual German and English. She lived in a neighborhood that was mixed African-American and German immigrants. And so as a result, she learned German from both from going to school and from playing with kids in her neighborhood. So she spoke German from an early age. Anyway, I've always remembered that story because I thought it expressed the kind of opportunities that we've had at moments in the United States where people could cross these sort of false cultural barriers that we're always throwing up, that people could have these cross-cultural, cross-language, cross-racial experiences, cross-religion experiences, and engage with each other. And that's when our communities and our nation is the strongest, when those things happen. But there are always people in the background who are always opposing those sort of things. And that's what happens when textbooks like that one I just mentioned of describing slavery as social security. That is the ongoing effort through history of trying to marginalize people, trying to maintain white power, white upper class supremacy.
Well, thank you for taking my call and answering my question. I'm going to mute my line.
All right. Thank you.
Much obliged, caller in Michigan. We had another caller. I will nab them. I do want to point out a few things.
You're just saying just buckets and buckets of words.
10 years. The first Thank you did you. Use, you for sure, for sure. You did use the word folks in the background. And we've already talked about sometimes it's the governor, coon man. Sometimes it's the person in the White House. Sometimes it's the senator who are putting in laws to shut down schools for 5 years. That's not someone in the background. That's someone standing front and center saying,
oh,
this is what
absolutely.
It's going to be
I'm
for an entire
time.
Hang on a second. 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 Just the word background was used, and I've emphasized it consistently. Words are very important when we talk about this, and just those types of words are consistently employed where we get away from the system of racism, white supremacy, dominates. It's not in the background. It's the foreground. It is the total picture. Racism, white supremacy. And the same reason why I consistently encourage our listeners avoid using terms like marginalized. Same thing. If we're talking about white terrorism, let's use that word as opposed to marginalized. And when you use the term to protect upper class white power, you read right at the beginning of the broadcast from the Democratic pamphlet about protecting us from the shiftless niggers, that it was making sure that all white men have access to the vote. It was irrespective
of...
Yeah,
but you missed... Okay, but remember...
Hang on a second.
Hang on a second. But
you're interrupting. You are interrupting. I have allowed you to speak, and you're interrupting.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, and I'll come back.
Thank you. And then, in my view, that right there is an act of racism, because I've allowed you to speak, and even our caller allowed you to speak when I was trying to make a point. Now, going back to what I was saying, you said to protect upper class white power. That's a point that I come back to on a regular basis. And I even recall your argument about the position put forward Ted Allen in his book about Bacon's Rebellion and bringing white people together. I've said consistently the class, that class argument or some sort of structure where you have lower class white people and all of that, the class is the white class, regardless of how much money or resources or whatever else it is. As a group, it is whites above all. It doesn't matter how much money you have, doesn't matter how much land you have. If you are white, you are supposed to be dominant over all of the niggers, and that is the system of white supremacy in total. I'm very careful about picking that out when it's any sort of language that makes it seem like it is just upper class white people or something of that nature. That's not what this is at all. I've said consistently, what does it mean to be white? I say what I said before when we were talking Democrat and Republican. What does it mean to be white? Everything else, you can put that way, way to the side. White supremacy dominates. Next person who called in. And in fact, I'll let you respond after I get our other caller. I don't think it's correct where a white person can be interrupting and kind of throw off the track of where I was going with the broadcast. The person that dialed in, last four digits, 9029. Did you have a question for Mr. Grogan? Line should be open.
Greetings, callers, listeners, and greeting Mr. Grogan.
Yes, good evening.
Two quick questions. And one was basically, when Gus asked you in regards to the quote by Tallahassee Coates, like, I'm not really sure if I'm clear how you can't see how that wearing black, I mean, like, dressing up in blackface and even dressing up in these weird outfits, how could you, do you not see that that's racist in a sense? Like.
Oh, no, I do absolutely see it as racist.
But do you think it really pains them, like, when they do these actions? I mean,
No, absolutely not. That's what I was saying. I don't know. When they did that thing in those photographs, no, it didn't pain them. They didn't think about it. That's my whole point. Does it pain them now? I don't know. Personally, I don't know if it pains them now. It pains them because it hurts them politically. That's first and foremost. Beyond that, I don't know.
I think that's accurate. I think the only pain that they're feeling right now is essentially political pressure. That's the only reason why we're even having this conversation, is because it's being put to the test. But also, in regards to prior question as far as confusion, the reality that we keep seeing, and this is what I think was a great question by the first caller, is if whites have confusion or are unaware of racism, how come we don't see confusion when it comes to accidentally just funding money to a black organization or treating us in a just and respectful manner on any level? I mean, we can go to just news reports in regards to politicians, and we can go to clothing lines. We can go in every single spectrum and every aspect of people activity. They don't seem to be confused. In fact, they seem to be very focused, very aware of exactly what they're doing. I mean, we could say that, I don't know if you said some...
Speechifying.
Some of them, the actions are unconscious. You said some of these actions are unconscious. Do you feel that way? By racists?
Oh, no. That's... Okay, I'm trying to make sure I'm understanding what you're asking me here. Do I think...
You feel that these
overtly racist
actions
are unconscious? I'm sorry, excuse me?
Do you feel that these actions are unconscious by racists?
No, I think racists... there are actions that are overtly racist. There's no question that there are actions that are overtly racist. There are other actions that are... I believe are racist, but they're not thought about. You know, so the whole notion going back to these photographs, they didn't think about what they were doing. They didn't think that it would be an insult. They didn't see it as racist. They thought of it as a joke. And that, I think, reflects back to what Gus was saying at the beginning of the program. And Governor Wilde was talking about the former state song of Virginia being carrying me back to old Virginia. Nobody thought about it. They sing this song and they don't listen to the lyrics. And that is inherently racist.
Okay.
Have I answered your question? Did I understand it right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to make sure that my perspective is clear, because it is not the same as Mr. Grogan at all. I am not and have never taken the position that white people do not think about the words from Carry Me Back to Old Virginia. That's not my perspective at all. It's not my perspective that Mr. Herring or Coon Man Governor Northam, that he didn't think about what he was doing when he blackened up. I think he thought about it in detail, because he said, I don't know if you've put that polish on, but it's hard to get off. That to me suggests that he might have done this more than once, which, yeah, I think he thought about it. I think white people are hyper aware of what they're doing when they practice racism. That's the reason I use the word practice. You are very conscious, willful, and deliberate. You can't accidentally close schools for 5 years. That has to be a conscious, thought out process. That's how you practice racism. And until there's other evidence, anytime I see an act of racism on the part of a white person, I assume this was a willful, conscious act. I do think at time to time, just like driving, using a metaphor here, just like driving, yeah, you can go on autopilot. You've been doing it so much, you can do that. You don't have to be thinking intensely about it every second. But that is a pretty willful, deliberate act, driving, even though you don't have to consciously be thinking every second, oh, I'm driving. You can stop and text a racist joke or three. I think this is Thomas in New York. You dialed in. You had a question or comment or question, excuse me. Thomas in New York, did you have a question for Mr. Grogan?
Yes, sir. I have quite a few questions. Gus, good evening. Good evening, sir. Thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it. The governor of Virginia admitted to putting on blackface to mimic Michael Jackson. And you said that you do not think that he's a racist. And I think it's in his heart. If Governor Northam was the man in the photo in the Klan outfit, would you think differently?
What Governor Northam did in those photographs is despicable one way or the other. It is racist in its history. It's racist in its intent. It is racist in what Gus has referred to as terrorism, because it is a pattern that has existed in Virginia for centuries, and particularly in the last century, of subtle and not so subtle ways of keeping black people oppressed. And so by definition, that becomes racist. It is racist. It's racist in its action, and it's racist in its intent.
Sir, excuse me. It was pretty much a yes or no question. If he was the man in the Klan outfit as opposed to the man in the blackface, would it change your view on being a racist or not? Yes or no?
Oh, no, no. I mean, it's racist one way or the other.
Okay, thank you.
It's blackface or a Klan outfit. Yeah, it's racist.
All right. Consumer protection.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I don't think that was, I think, was your question, Thomas, because you asked if Governor Northam was the person in the Klan outfit, would that change your thoughts about whether Governor Northam was racist? Was that your question?
Yes, he said no.
He said about the photo, though. He said it wouldn't change his perception. He still would think that the photo is racist. He didn't ask about the photo. He asked about Governor Northam, because when I asked you before, you said no. You don't think Governor Northam is racist? And so his question was...
Okay. Well, I misunderstood the question then.
Yeah, let's get that correct.
Maybe I misunderstood.
I'm sorry. I thought you were referring specifically to the photograph.
No, the person. We're talking about Governor Northam. If Governor Northam was the guy in the Klan outfit, would that change your response about whether Governor Coon Man Northam is racist? That was the question.
Okay, let me hear it from the gentleman.
Yes, sir. Thomas.
Is that exact? I'm sorry. Let me just clarify. That's what you're wanting to ask about Governor Northam today.
If Governor Northam was the man in the Klan outfit, you said that you don't think he was a racist. Under the impression that he's the man in blackface and the Michael Jackson dressed up, whatever. If he's the man in the Klan outfit, do you still think that he's not a racist?
I don't think... I don't know how to answer that question. If a man does something racist... Five years ago.
I'll go to the next question.
Okay.
Because I think you said enough. consumer protection fraud scams, dangerous products, environmental laws, criminal justice cases, court cases, appeals, enforcement adjustments, child enforcement, child support, victim programs. Would you say that black people are most affected by those things, sir?
Are most affected, you mean?
Most affected by consumer protection, fraud, scams, dangerous products, environmental laws, criminal court. Yes?
Gosh, I don't know. I don't have any information on that. I know they're all huge problems, but I think they're a huge problem for society as a whole. But I do know, and this has been in press recently in discussions about payday loans and, title loans and things like that, that those do impact African-American communities much more than they do white communities. And those are essentially scams. Those are legal scams.
The reason why I asked that is because the Attorney General of the state is in charge of enforcing the laws and making sure that those things are handled. And the Attorney General admitted to putting on blackface himself to mimic Curtis Blow. And because he did that, I equate him to be a racist. What do you think should be done about that? Someone with that much power having these photos come out or admitting to being in blackface.
I don't know. This is the problem with these things. If a man does something 35 years ago, it was unquestionably racist. Can he absolve himself through the work he does over his lifetime? And I think that's a question that somehow needs to be answered. And I don't know what the answer to that is. But as I said earlier, go ahead.
Could you see someone that admitted to being a child molester being in charge of the child services protection programs in your state?
Oh, no, absolutely not. No. And so this goes back to the fundamental point I was making is about the insidious nature of the culture of Virginia. And I'm sure I just know Virginia. I don't know the Deep South, but I'm sure we're talking about the same thing, not just through the South, but through the United States, of people thinking that they can do stuff like that, put on blackface, wear a Klan outfit, and that it's not a big deal. And thinking that kind of thinking is in itself racist, that they don't think it's a big deal, that they don't think about consequences. And Gus has said they were thinking it through. They were doing these things. They were doing them intentionally, quite obviously. Now, the question is,
but
then,
you don't seem to think it's a big deal either, though. You said that you don't feel this person's being a racist. He's not in his heart. So you seem to follow the same
train. I said I don't know his heart. I'm just talking about what he's done in his career. You know, I mean, like I said earlier in the program, that Attorney General Herring and the previous governor, McAuliffe, made this great effort to rename the building that houses the office of the Attorney General. This was renamed after an African-American high school girl who helped create a situation that led to Brown versus Board of Education. So those are overt acts, whether they're, I don't know that they're claimed to be absolvable. I'm not saying that in any way, but I'm just saying that's a demonstrative act by people trying to honor, recognize, and forward the conditions of African Americans. So I think there has to be some way that we can address these issues, that we can talk about history, and at the same time that we work to end racism, which is a extraordinary battle, and also move forward with every manner of social condition that needs to be improved for everybody in society, and particularly for African Americans, where they've been cut off from all kinds of opportunities. Education. I mean, we had terrible education, public education here in Virginia today. You know, Gus has talked about, and we've talked about this 5-year closing public schools in Prince Edward County in the 1960s. Well, here today, the public schools in Richmond are just falling apart. They're in terrible condition.
That's everywhere. So I have a few more questions, though.
Yeah.
I don't think that in a state where they have so many memorials of these races, for them to make a name a building after one of the victims of racism is a big deal. Today is 2019, and from the time of George Jamestown, the colony, Virginia has been the state with the most dedicated racist white supremacists, in my opinion. What would your response be to that, sir?
Virginia always, particularly during the Civil Rights era, Virginia portrayed itself as above the fray. They portrayed themselves by saying, we're not like the Deep South. We're not like those racists. We don't have Klan in Virginia. Harry Byrd, when he was governor and senator and controlled the political machine in Virginia for decades, he made a point of keeping the Klan out of Virginia. But what Virginia did was they suppressed people with laws, and very harsh laws against black people. And they also led the fight for massive resistance across the South. So Virginia has always been bad. They've just always portrayed themselves as better than anybody else. But it's not actually true. And I think Virginia is as bad as any place in the South.
Okay. So I have to, thank you for the time, Gus. I have a couple of yes, no questions, if you don't mind. I don't think they need a huge response, but do you have any black jokes, yes or no?
Do I have any what?
Black jokes, they sometimes call it nigger jokes.
Do I know any black jokes?
Yes, sir.
No. I mean, I don't...
From the great state of Virginia?
Well, I'm not a Virginia native. I'm not a Virginia native.
By any stretch
of the imagination. No, I came to Virginia strictly to work on this history about school desegregation. I grew up in Washington, D.C. I lived in California for 30 years, and I came to Virginia just to do this research and work on this story about Prince Edward County.
Have you had any sexual relations with any black men or women, sir?
Oh, gosh. I don't know that that's an appropriate... I don't know that I want to answer that question.
If you don't want to answer, that's fine.
I wouldn't answer that question. Regardless, I wouldn't talk about my sexual life or experiences.
That's perfectly fine.
My romance,
sir, I totally understand.
About anything, regardless of whether it was about race or homosexuality or any manner of it. That's just personal stuff.
No problem, sir. Coon man. What is a coon, sir?
Well, a coon is just another use of another expression of the N-word. I mean, I think, you know, historically, that's how it's been used.
So he's nigger man? Is that what they're saying?
Well, that's what Northam had in his yearbook photo, Governor Northam had. And
gotcha. And this is my last question.
It's other racist language. Yeah, it's just another, you know, it's like Sambo or any of, you know, this whole history and litany of that kind of language.
Absolutely.
But that's where Northam was taking it from. Yeah, no question.
Last question. Thank you, Gus, for letting me ask this many questions. I'm willfully ignorant. When did this start? According to white history books, and blacks came in 1619 as slaves. So they're freed in the 1860s, Reconstruction, Black Codes, Jim Crow, Civil Rights, Black Panthers, Black Lives Matter. When did willfully ignorant white people start walking around the United States? I'll mute my line. Thank you, Gus.
Oh, 1619. You know, as soon as African Americans arrive in the United States and they're considering them as non-human, you have to be willfully ignorant to look at a non-human being and think they're not human. And I think it's been built into the history books ever since.
I think retired firefighter in Florida, did you have a question for Mr. Grogan? You should be with us.
Yes. To the guest, why haven't white people solved the problem?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Money, political power, people refusing to acknowledge other human beings. It comes down to that. You know, we talk about the civil rights movement. That was this sort of narrow period in American history that got a definition, it got names, it had particular events, but it wasn't just from 1954 to 1968 or the death of Martin Luther King. It has been a battle that's been ongoing since slavery was created with the arrival of first African Americans in 1619. So the reason that white people haven't solved it is because mostly they haven't wanted to, because they could use it to their advantage.
Okay, so does that conflict with your term that I've heard previously of white people being ignorant?
Willfully ignorant, I was talking about willfully ignorant of history, willfully ignorant of the conditions of oppression that black people in the United States deal with day in and day out. You have to work hard not to pay attention, not to see those kind of things. It's like people complaining about Colin Kaepernick for kneeling. And you can only complain about Colin Kaepernick if you refuse to recognize what Colin Kaepernick has knelt during the American national anthem. And, you know, and people say he's dishonoring the American flag, he's dishonoring the troops. Well, that takes willful ignorance to make those kind of statements, because they're not true. And so you have to be willing to, you know, fabricate all kinds of new stories about a situation in order to explain away or brush away the underlying racism of the situation. And what Colin Kaepernick was protesting was systemic racism in the United States. So I think that's what I'm trying to use. I want to use that term, willful ignorance, is about not wanting to know the history. not wanting to know the experience of the African Americans in the U.S.
Well, is willful ignorance willful? Is that a choice that white people make? Is to not have an understanding?
Oh, yes. In those situations, I think so.
Would you identify that as being a practice of racism, white supremacy?
Yes. Yes, because if you're not willing to look at it, if you're not willing to listen, if you're not willing to recognize what, and I'm just using Kaepernick as a example in this context, but if you're not willing to look at that and recognize that, if you're not willing to look at what Black Lives Matter really means, and what they're protesting, then you have to be making a decision not to want to engage and not wanting to make an effort to understand what those issues are about.
Does that conflict with your previous statement in stating that white people are more ignorant?
No, I didn't think I said that. What I was saying was that the term willful ignorance was about that. It was about refusing to learn history, understand history, or to recognize the, you know, centuries-old dynamic of racism in the United States. I mean, I'm not saying one person or another, one way or the other, is ignorant in an intellectual sense, but I used that term willful ignorance about making a decision not to understand, not to learn, and refusing to engage in facts or history as a way of being understand what racism really is and what the experience of African Americans is.
Perceivably, if white people, you stated, are ignorant, then why they don't have the problem?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Perceivably, if white people are ignorant, as you stated, then why don't they have the problem of being mistreated based on color?
I'm sorry, I'm not quite grasping what you're getting at here. I didn't say that white people are ignorant. I said that there was a willful ignorance about not wanting to know.
There was a previous question when someone asked you a question and stated who is more ignorant on the system of racism and white supremacy. And you said,
that is the same thing.
If that is correct, according to you, because I don't think it is, personally, then why don't they have the problem?
Why don't they have what problem?
Being mistreated based on color.
Why don't white people have the problem of being mistreated? Well, because they're
based on color. We're talking about racism, sir. We're talking about racism, white supremacy, since this program has started.
Right.
Matter of fact, since the program has started 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And white people don't have the problem. Non-white people have the problem. Do you think that's correct?
That white people don't have that problem?
Yes, sir.
No, they don't. They don't, because they're the political power. They're the political and social
power. Then could you explain someone that is ignorant and a problem that exists? Can you explain on why they don't have the problem?
Of being subjected to racism?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think because the political and economic and social structure of the United States has favored white people. It always has.
Is it,
And so
is it just limited to, excuse me, sir, is it just limited to the place that's called the United States?
Oh, no.
Or is it a global problem?
Well, we're just talking about the United States. We're talking about United States history there. That's why I'm referencing it. It is a global problem.
Whoa. Excuse me. Racism, white supremacy, do you think it's just limited to one area, one small area on the planet? Or is it global?
No.
Whatever happens where you're sitting at, or if you're standing or laying down, I don't know what position you're in, if it exists there, is it extended on a global basis?
Last question.
Yes, it is extended on a global basis. But when you start talking about it globally, then you are not talking simply about white-black racism, but you're also talking about other kinds of racism that are based on countries or ethnic origins or other races involved. And that is a much, much larger discussion, much, much larger issue.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. The person that dialed in, last four digits, 4362, 4362. Did you have a question for Mr. Grogan?
Good evening to everyone. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Good evening.
Yes, Mr. Grogan, I'd like to know, do you think the term willful ignorance, do you think that's the most accurate term to use when describing what white people, you know, tend to do sometimes? And I ask this because I believe the definition, maybe I'm ignorant, but I believe the definition of ignorance is just not knowing. So if you don't know, do you think that's an accurate term to use, or do you think that could be a term that could be kind of used to confuse people even more?
Again, I would like to go back to how I first used that, and it was in a context of saying a willful ignorance of not wanting to know about the African-American experience, not wanting to know about conditions of racism, not wanting to know about history, about why conditions exist. You know, people, for instance, you know, that quotation from the Constitutional Convention in 1902 where it describes the shiftless Negro. Well, if you accept that language on its face value without looking around you and recognizing that at turn of the century Virginia, there were a number of thriving black enterprises. There was a black newspaper in Richmond that was quite well established. So it takes a willful ignorance to accept that language that applies to an entire race of people as being shiftless. And that's the context in which I was concerned. And even up to today, to say that, you know, black people's problems, black communities, African American individuals struggle because it's their own fault, it's their race, or whatever. That takes a willful
Mr. Grogan
to ignore the history of all
Mr.
of
Mr. Grogan.
Yes.
Sir, I just want to – I have two more questions. Do you think that – all right, can a white person commit a racist act and not be considered a racist?
Well, I think that's the whole nature of those photographs of Governor Northam. And that's, again, that's part of what my thinking is. It is a racist act to be in blackface, but the whole creation of minstrel shows was a racist act. It was a way of
You believe a white person can commit a racist act and not be considered a racist.
I'm sorry. No, 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 no,
I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. The act is racist. What I was saying was that they committed that act. They don't think about it as being racist. But the fact that they don't think about it being racist doesn't excuse the fact that they are, or that the act was racist.
So they are or they're not a racist? I just want a simple, can a white person commit a racist act and not be considered a racist? Do you think that's true or not true?
I don't think you can. No. You know, if somebody puts on a Klan outfit, that's a racist act, they're a racist.
Okay. And my last question is, so with that being said, you would say the governor of Virginia is a racist, correct?
That is the question that I posed earlier about how does one assess over time. At the time he did that, I say that is a racist act. And where he is today, I don't know, because I don't know them. Look at his historical record and try to assess, you know, can somebody redeem themselves? Can somebody grow past it? Can somebody grow out of it? I have a friend here in Virginia who describes himself as a white redneck racist growing up. And in his teens or late teens, when he first started college, he had a reckoning. And he spent the entire rest of his career, he's now 80 years old, he spent the rest of his career as a social activist, as a civil rights researcher, as a civil rights activist. He was very involved in desegregation in Richmond.
So you do believe a white person can be a racist, commit a racist act and be labeled a racist, and then at some point not be labeled a racist depending on, you know, I guess acts that they've done after.
Yes. Okay. If Paul on the road to Damascus can have a conversion, I think other people can have that same experience. And I think my friend who I
and who determines and who would determine if that person is not a racist? Do you think that the individual would say, "Hey, I'm not a racist"? How do you determine that? Is it just, you know, depending
on? I think it's the proof of your life. You know, you don't go out and say, I'm no longer racist if you can't prove it. You know, it's about.
All right. My last question is, can you still practice racism and not know all the history and facts and the development of racism? Like, can you still practice racism and not know the history, like, you know, everything that happened throughout the history that was racist? Can you still practice racism and just not know the facts?
Oh, yeah, I think that's part of the problem. People do that because they accept language and history of the past that was racist by its very nature. And so people can be racist today, and they don't need to know anything about the history. They don't want to know about the history. They just still assume a position of white supremacy. And so.
Okay, and my last question. And I know if your quote unquote best friend was a racist, would you tell black people or other white people that this person is a racist? This is someone that you grew up with and you're very close to.
I didn't grow up with him. I met him late in life. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, but he would describe, he tells himself, he gives lectures, he tells himself, he talks publicly about how he grew up with a white racist father in a poor white neighborhood and had just had all of the upbringing of.
But essentially, you're saying that he redeemed himself, so he's not a racist anymore. So he's.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I think this Ed Peebles is the least racist person I've ever met, probably. And I think that would be attested to by his career of all of the people and civil rights organizations that he's worked with throughout his career.
It
doesn't mean because somebody
question.
Starts in a bad place or is born in a bad place, it doesn't mean that they're irredeemable.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Paul on the Road to Damascus, the religion of white supremacy. Imhan Deasy, if you had a question for Mr. Grogan, you should be with us. Imhan Deasy, are you with us, sir?
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Thank you. I had a question for the guests.
Yes.
Sir? Yes. May I ask you about white supremacy?
Oh, certainly. That's what we're here for, talk about this.
Okay. Are you a white person?
I am a white person, yes, I am.
Did you agree to Mr. Gus's definition of white supremacy?
What, is a terrorist act?
I didn't hear your response. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I was just clarifying what portion, what exactly you were referencing.
Did Mr. Gus give a definition of white supremacy, and did you agree to that definition?
Basically, yes. Yes, he described it as, I mean, he said several times here about that it's a racist, it's a terrorist act. And fundamentally, I agree with that definition.
I didn't give my full definition today because he's been on the program before, and I gave the definition on his first visit. So if you want to, we'd have to do it again. But, yeah, I gave it when he was here in 2012, not today.
Yes, yes. So fundamentally, yes, I agree with Gus, and that's why I'm back talking with you all again.
Yes, sir. Can you give me the definition as you understand it, or your definition, if you agree with Mr. Gus's definition? I would imagine your definition would be very close.
Well, so I think
my question
was,
if you could give me your definition. Yes, sir.
Yes, it's any ideology, whether it's political, economic, social, cultural, religious, that suppresses another race. No, so it has the broadest possible applications, every facet of human life. That if one power group is using their position of power to suppress another group based upon race, then that's racism.
Oh, well, I asked the definition of white supremacy.
I know that
white supremacy and racism is usually interchanged, but
I responded that way because I see them interchangeably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the whole notion.
Well, can you give me your definition of white supremacy? Because I think Mr. Gus, he gives his definition of white supremacy in a very clear, concise definition. And if you were to agree to that, then I would imagine your definition would be very close.
Well,
I just wondered your definition.
And I don't recall his exact definition from our phone call a few years ago, but I do know in response to his stating this evening about it being terrorism, white terrorism, that I do fundamentally agree with that.
What's your definition of white supremacy?
Oh, it is that. It is that completely false belief that for some reason the white race is superior to anybody else. And that's through history, it's not just directed towards African Americans, but it's been directed towards Asians, it's been directed towards Indians, subcontinent Indians, and so it's directed towards Native Americans, and all of that is racist. Yeah. It's all white supremacy.
Well, can I
and
say
it's all been terroristic?
Yes, sir. Well, to clarify, I'm going to move on to the next question after I just clarify what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Well, the definition that you gave, you said it is a belief, but that's not a material thing. So usually in definitions, every definition I've seen, I've never seen the definition is a belief, because I've just not seen that a definition of any term that I've ever read. And I read a lot of terms.
I'm trying to say,
what is the actual action? What is the thing of white supremacy? What is that?
Well, I just pulled this up on a dictionary. It is a supremacy
is a state of condition or condition of being superior to all others in authority, power, or status. So you just add white in front of it, and it is white people claiming they're superior to all others in authority, power, or status. So it is white.
Is it just claiming, or is it doing to actually being? This, I do think it's important in order to get to any further questioning. Is it actually being in a status of superiority, or is it just a thought that a person has that is not a reality in this material world? Is it a thing? Is it an action? What is white? That's my last question. I've asked him, what is white supremacy? Just so, because I don't get the action.
Well, they're two different. I think they're two, we're parsing words a little bit here, but there could be a poor white person who's a white supremacist, but they don't actually have any power over anybody else. But they are racist and they are white supremacists because they believe they're better than anybody else. But then a white supremacist government that writes racist laws, that is the action. That's the power. The other one is an ideology.
So you're saying that not every white person is actually participating in the action of white supremacy? Is that what you're saying?
Not every white person would necessarily have the power to participate in, but they would by voting for racist politicians, by supporting racist laws or activities. But some people may not have, personally or individually, have political or economic power to impose their white supremacy on somebody else.
Yes, sir. Can you tell me what is a white person?
What is a white person?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's a construct of race, and I referenced this earlier. In the United States, it is a term that was created in the early 1600s, to differentiate people from African Americans. And it was when the foundations of racism and foundations of racial separation were created in the United States and foundationally in the growth of our society. But a white person, per se, can be all kinds of people. You know, it can be a German, it could be somebody from France, it could be...
What's the physical description? I think I know what the physical description of a black person is, but I'm asking for the physical description of a white person. If I were to step out of my house, I'm just a person, how do I know what a white person is? Physical description.
A person with pale skin, but that doesn't even quite do it because a person from pale skin could be Asian. And so I think it is more of a, I don't know. I don't know how to really answer that for you.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you want to continue or can I?
Go ahead. Yeah, another question. Yeah.
Okay. Are you a white supremacist?
No. No, absolutely not.
Okay. Well, what is your level of knowledge of white supremacy? Last question.
What is your
level of knowledge of white supremacy?
Well, I think, my area of expertise and what I've been studying is Virginia racial history with the narrow focus.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I change my last question that question?
Yeah, sure.
It's not sufficient as the last question.
Yeah.
Sir, Mr. Gus, do you agree?
Proceed.
Sure, go ahead.
Last question. Is is white people being in America white supremacy, given that white people had to come here and kill people and they have to dominate in order to be here? Is white people being in America white supremacy? Thank you.
Yes, I think you could say that in large measure. Because the arrival of Northern Europeans in North America led to the decimation of the Native American tribes that existed here for thousands of years. And then they later imported people to serve as slaves from Africa. And so that is both of those two, those fundamental acts in the creation of a European culture in the United States were based on racism. So I think, yes, it is white supremacy.
Grand. Got direct answer on that one. Henry in Chicago, did you have a question for Mr. Grogan? Henry in Chicago.
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, good evening.
Oh, all right. Good evening, Gus, and good evening to the guests. You mentioned earlier that Governor Northam did a racist act, but you saying he's not a racist. Is that correct?
I said, yeah, he did a racist act. There's no question to my thinking that what he did in 1980s was racist.
But you don't believe he's a racist person?
Today, no, I don't think he is.
Okay. Do you believe that his political opponent in the gubernatorial race in 2017, do you believe that Ed Kolesky is a racist?
Borderline. I think if you look at the other guy, oh gosh, now I've forgotten his name. Sorry, I'm blanking out his name. He ran against Kolesky, and then he ran in the recent election against for senator against Tim Kaine, another Republican, was an avowed racist. I mean, there's, I think Kolesky, I think, was you could probably call a racist, certainly a white supremacist.
What about the Speaker of the Virginia House, Kirk Cox, who was supposed to be the third in line for the governor? Do you think he's a racist?
I think he's a really good example of some of the things we talked about earlier. I've heard Cox talk, and I've read articles he's written about Virginia history, and he is a huge defender of these statues to Confederate heroes on Monument Avenue in Richmond. And so I think, yes, that is fundamentally a racist point of view.
Okay, that is it. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Spectacular. I think we got all of our listeners. The snow has accumulated. It has been extraordinary just in the time that we have been on the air watching it pile up. I mean, wow. Snowpocalypse 2019. I have a compensatory investment request, Mr. Grogan. We have our Cows 10-year anniversary yoga retreat coming up in Druryville, Virginia. I told Mr. Grogan before the program I'm flying into Richmond in 10 days. I'm flying in a day before the retreat starts on the 21st. My compensatory investment request, if you could hook us up with yoga mats, yoga blocks for the retreat. That would be awesome. We have 14 people coming into VA, and most of them are black people who've never done yoga, and it would be grand to have mats and blocks there waiting for them. That way they don't have to, or I don't know if they're flying or driving, but either way, it would be better if they did not have to travel with a yoga mat. And
And tell me where Druryville is.
Buddy, it's about... 60 minutes south, basically, of Richmond. It's not really close to anything. It's about 60 minutes south of Richmond, and it's about 60 minutes west of Norfolk, basically, like northwest of Norfolk.
Ah, okay.
It's kind of close to the North Carolina border, but it's not really close to anything. That's why I'm just kind of – and I've never been there before either, so that's the best I can tell you.
Okay, well, look, send me an email reminder. I will look into this for you because I have practiced yoga myself for years. And I know a number of yoga instructors in Richmond and some yoga studios. So let me just ask around.
That would be awesome. Yeah, if they could
come for you. And at the very least, I'd be happy to loan you a couple of yoga mats I have here. let's definitely talk about this. I'd be happy to try and help you with that one.
It would be grand. That seems like, especially if you do, how many years have you practiced yoga?
15 or 20, I think.
Right on. It's been helpful for you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Keeps me alive.
Keeps him alive. That nothing need more be said there. Keeps him alive. I just got my certification as a yoga instructor last summer. I got my 85-hour prenatal certification and am in the process of getting my 500-hour certification, and have said, hey, I think it would, that made that a part of my mission as a yoga instructor, to make sure that I am getting black
people. That's a whole other thing to our conversation, Gus.
Yes, yes. So that would
And what style of yoga did you get your
I'm Power Vinyasa trained, but I also I have my prenatal certification, and adding to the repertoire as we proceed. But Power Vinyasa certified, prenatal certified, looking to add more. We'll be in Virginia. We'll be Grant if you can help out with the yoga mats, yoga blocks. I will definitely email you the details, see if you can hook that up. I did have one more point to bring up, especially since Mr. Bird was mentioned so regularly and he was the leader in the mass resistance effort, in my view, to support and continue white terrorism, white supremacy, to make sure that black children do not get quality education in Virginia. And we've talked about a number of white people who made that their mission, to see that black people were denied quality education. Remember another one of my legends, former governor of South Carolina, the legend, Pitchfork, Ben Tillman, almost got to president. We spent a lot of time talking about him too. Co-founder of Clemson, talking about education, but that's another state. There was an article in the News and Daily Advance. I haven't read that paper in so many years. I've been able to go back and look through Virginia News articles over the past few weeks with all of this. They had a report where they're trying to change the name of one of the streets in Richmond to Arthur Ashe. And this is what they said. They said at one end sits Bird Park. With tennis courts where Ash was denied access during his childhood because of segregation, should be white supremacy, white terrorism. The athletic center named for Ash is on Boulevard. City Council member Kim Gray, whose district covers a portion of Boulevard, has sponsored the Ash renaming ordinance. Some residents and business owners say they don't want to change the historic name. Others cite the inconvenience and expense of officially changing their address, including getting new letterhead and signs. Harris and Gray, I just want to stop right there as someone who lives in a city with a football team. Now, I have seen whites rejoice. The Redskins are getting new uniforms? Woohoo! We get to go out and change it. Sorry. Anyway, so it says Harris and Gray say they understand those concerns, but also believe racism may underlie some of the opposition. I find it hard to believe that people get angry over stationery, said Gray, who said she's received racist emails over the proposal. Just to go full circle, because I feel like we started the program with white people making racist rants about something seemingly trivial being changed, where it didn't seem like willful ignorance. It didn't seem like they were confused. It didn't seem like they didn't understand.
I agree.
Dedicated to racism, white supremacy. Now, did you want to respond?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, pardon? You want a response from me?
Oh, I said, if you had anything you wanted to add to the report.
I live near the Boulevard, and I live in Kim Gray's district, and she is a terrific councilwoman for the city of Richmond. And I've heard all these arguments. Now, to back up just a little bit, I forget the exact year it happened, but there was a statue of Arthur Ashe that was installed on Monument Avenue, probably 20 years ago now. And there was a huge fight about that at the time. It's blocks down, a mile or two down the avenue past Stonewall Jackson, so it's far beyond any of the Confederate memorials. It is in the much later section of Monument Avenue, So it wasn't built at the houses out there weren't built at the same time as where the big Confederate memorials are. But there was this huge outcry. How there was an insult to the history of Monument Avenue and everything. And eventually it won and they erected this statue. And this response now to the notion of renaming Boulevard, Arthur Ashe Boulevard, it's just the same language. It's the same people. It's the same responses. 10 years ago, I think it was about, there was a statue of Abraham Lincoln and his son installed at a Civil War museum here in Richmond. And there were people that were incensed by the notion of a statue of Abraham Lincoln in Richmond. And they were, the big cry and complaint was that Richmond was the man that burned the city of Richmond. Well, Lincoln did not burn the city of Richmond at the end of the Civil War. Jefferson Davis and the Confederates set fire to the city of Richmond when they fled at the end of the Civil War. They tried to destroy their munitions factories, and in doing so, they set fire to the city of Richmond. And it was Union Army coming into Richmond to put out the fires and save the city. Well, you know, 150 years later, they're complaining about having a statue of Abraham Lincoln in Richmond. So there is that undercurrent. It's exactly, okay, there's language. Wrong word. Thank you. That overt language of racism that is just barely beneath the surface. There are people in Richmond who are fighting for change. There are people who are campaigning for changing the name of the boulevard, Arthur Ashe Boulevard. But it's an ongoing battle. It is a long fight. And Richmond has a long ways to go.
We have been chatting it up. Mr. Brian Grogan joining us live from Virginia. I will definitely follow up with an email with information. It would be grand if we could get 14 yoga mats, 24 yoga blocks. That would be great. But I'll follow up with the email with the details and all that. We'll be hanging out in VA in about 10 days. It has been a hoot kind of reviewing some of the history of white terrorism in the state of Virginia. Thank you so much for sharing a bit of your Sunday evening. I know it's getting late out there. We will definitely keep an eye on what's happening with the Virginia political scene. I'm pretty certain that Governor Coon Man Northam will be remaining in office. So we'll see how all of this unfolds. I'm a little less certain about Lieutenant Governor Fairfax. I would not be surprised if he ends up having to step down, or I would not be surprised about anything with him. We'll have to stay tuned. But thank you so much for sharing a bit of your evening with us, Mr. Grogan. We will definitely be in touch, and the email will be forthcoming, sir.
Okay, great talking to you again, Gus.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for calling me. Thanks for inviting me on.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Context of white supremacy. Wowee. Woo! Virginia. Going in detail about what they call it, home state. Religion of white supremacy. Can't say that enough. Religion of white supremacy. The reference. Anytime we got biblical references, that's 2 days in a row. We had yesterday about Liam Neeson being crucified. That was what Robin Roberts said. Liam Neeson was being crucified. And I said, watch those biblical references 2 days in a row. Religion of white supremacy. Great questions from listeners. Glad we got the buckets sound effect in. I can only state it has been surreal. This is, I think, like the third day in a row to be here in Seattle and to be doing a live program or to be on the phone. And just in the hour that I have sat here, the accumulation of so is absolutely amazing. I think 3-4 inches of snow has fallen just in the time that we've been sitting here. It's for a place that generally does not get a lot of snow. Anyway, snow or no, I am going to yoga. Just in case they close the studio, it is 2 minutes away. That is something that I love about living in downtown Seattle, even in a snowstorm, or especially in a snowstorm. everything that I love doing is roughly 2 to 3 blocks away from the residence. So I can just go out and admire. Oh, look, they got snow penises. We'll give 2 minutes. If folks have a quick comment they need to get in, Mr. Grogan, what they heard during the broadcast, any short, concise, pithy comments folks can get in 2 minutes.
Can I be heard?
Imhan Dici.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So I did speak very long. His question, his answering wasn't sufficient, but he did say that white people, he said that not all white people were white supremacists. However, he said that white people being in America was white supremacy. Therefore, by his answering, all the white people in America are white supremacists. For, you know, at least for what he said, that would make him a white supremacist. Also, the things, the beginning, when I heard him answering the questions from the callers, it was very laborious to listen to him. It was very, very laborious. And he is an intelligent person who can answer directly. You can have a direct conversation with that person, but he's intentionally, evidently refusing to have a direct conversation. Thank you.
Word masters, for sure. 60 seconds. Anyone else have commentary?
I wasn't aware that there were any limitations on the subject of racism and white supremacy. But he stated that, quote unquote, that we were only talking about place that he identified as the United States.
That is pretty common as well, where they will try to find different ways of limiting the dialogue and really the scope of white terrorism to limit what they are doing. That is 2 minutes. We will be here if you have additional comments. I'm pretty sure the controversy in Virginia will continue, so we'll be able to pick all that up further. I'll update about the compensatory investment request if we get the yoga mats and such for the retreat. That would be helpful, particularly if he practices yoga and knows yoga white people with studios. That's meager. That's talk about crumbs. They should be able to get that easily. Anyway, we'll be here on Tuesday. We should be here Tuesday evening. Dr. Ruby Lathan, speaking of yoga, he said it saved his life. She said becoming plant-based saved her life. We're doing both at the COWS 2019 10-year anniversary yoga retreat, plant-based and yoga. But Dr. Lathan, she is a Black female nutritionist, and she said she was having health problems and switching to a plant-based diet saved her life. And I'm really excited. She was in the documentary, or she is in the documentary film, What the Health? And she talks in a lot of detail about what being plant-based has meant to her and how it's helped her life. And now she dedicates a lot of her time and energy to trying to help other people improve their health just by what they put on their plate. That is Tuesday. Check Black Talk Radio Network, Facebook, all of that. We should be good to go. With that, Gus T, off to yoga. Hopefully, you all can pray for me. Stay safe in all of the extra whiteness here in Seattle. Sobriety still would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Stay as safe as we can. In addition to remaining sober, let's be buckled up each and every time we are in a vehicle, passenger or driver. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed. I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.